Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 88. Got an old friend, Justin Rowan, here today at Cavs Onida, host of the Chase Down podcast, the official Cavaliers podcast. Why Cavs? Not a ton going on in Cavaliers land, but I always find Justin a pretty good barometer of how things are going in the East, especially as the Cavs become a more prominent contender in the East, I could say. Yeah, I'll go that far. Borderline contender. I really like their team. Their defense is legit. They got a star leading the way. Two stars, really, in Darius Garland and Jared Allen. A budding one in Evan Mobley, who might be already ready the way he looked last year, especially on the defensive end of the floor. So I'm going to talk a little Cavs with him. Kevin Durant, can't go an episode without hitting on him. We're going to bounce a little more around the league in terms of his prospects right now. And then, yeah, not much else happening. Colin Sexton's out there. That's why I want to talk about the Cavs. Caris LeVert still needs an extension. Number of players still need extensions. Tyler Hero among them. And then I've mostly been watching baseball. Believe it or not, I've kind of become a little bit disillusioned with baseball, but the Red Sox, to me, are still a fun watch because they fight. Now, the GM situation drives me crazy. I haven't been a Bloom fan since year one, the lost season in 2020, essentially, where Fenway Park was empty. I remember staring at it across the city, my friend's house in Southie, on the roof, and you'd just look over there and see the lights on and know a game's going on, but no one would be at Fenway. And no one was really watching that year. I think I watched two games total that year. It was after Mookie. No one was happy with the team, and they were a disaster. Last year, up and down, hot finish. As I said, never seen Boston more intrigued by baseball, maybe since like 2013. Last year's run was incredible. Two wins short of a World Series appearance. And they only had a few holes to fill, and instead they let a couple guys go, and they left those holes open, and the team went on this incredible, I think, 20-6 June, still fighting, still coaching well, a mess of a pitching staff, the core is spinning into something that can result in wins each night, and then last month it went off the rails in just dramatic ways. The drop grand slam, blown leads left and right, every night you look, they're down three or four, sometimes five runs in the first three, four innings. It got horrifying at one point. The Durant misplays, the bottom half of the order, the injuries, and then that Sale broken finger. It was like, all right, that's the kind of season this is going to be. But they're showing a little life. Good series against the Yankees. Excellent pitching performances from Waka and others. Whitlock still money. Diekman feels like they found a little bit in him. Schreiber, rather, not Diekman. Schreiber feels a little. I think Diekman's gone. Schreiber, they found something in him. And they're hanging on. They're hanging in there. 4.5 back of the wild card. Do I want to believe? No. They're running out of time. They traded Christian Vasquez. Another really frustrating moment this year. The two guys they added, Eric Hosmer, Tommy Pham, look like great pieces. And you know, listen, Bloom has made some good moves over the years here. You think of Hunter Renfro. Verdugo hasn't been the worst player in the world. Bringing in Jose Iglesias last year. They've had their moments. Trevor Story, can he get back on the field and help them a little bit down the stretch here? I'm still waiting to see if that's going to be a good move. A move that I like in the end. I always thought he was a Colorado guy, and it hasn't been great this year. Can they get in the mix? Yankees slipping. Yankees look a little vulnerable right now. Jays have lost 7-10. I'm keeping my hopes up, even though I probably shouldn't. And, you know, what else am I going to watch? Patriots getting going. I'm going to camp tomorrow. Today, as you hear this. They have not looked great. And if I'm looking at BetOnline odds right now, I doubt they're even in the mix for the Super Bowl. Odds to win the Super Bowl. Bills favorites right now on betonline.ag plus 600. Buccaneers plus 850. Chiefs 1,100. Rams same. Packers 1,200. Chargers 1,200. Wow. I like the Chargers. It's Niners, 1,600, even with Trey Lance. 1,800 is the Ravens. Bengals, 2,000. It's not terrible. The whole Deshaun Watson saga going on. Browns still 2,200. Pretty wide open field this year when you look at it. But New England Patriots plus 5,000 to win it all. Vegas not feeling great. Bet Online not feeling great about the Patriots. A lot of good information over there ahead of football season. Division futures, conference futures. Football is really right around the corner. And I'm pretty excited. Going to get some fantasy going. College football, not going to mention Syracuse. Listen, we got too much other stuff to talk about right now. Celtics will be back before you know it, too. Got some basketball futures over here. Who are the NBA future leaders right now for championships? Still the Celtics, 400. Gap is narrowed a little bit. Bucks, 550. Warriors, 700. Clippers, 750. Suns in at 1,000. Nets, back up to 1,400, by the way. BetOnline, feeling pretty good about Durant coming back. Team wins. Interested to see what they got Brooklyn at. Do they even have Brooklyn on the board? Of course they do not. Yeah, we got to wait and see what's going to happen with Durant here. But BetOnline, you know them by now. Fastest, easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, events. Was first to market odds and lines. Can find reviews and news of every league, MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, even golf. Yeah, even golf. Saw that ball bouncing around on the edge of the water today. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource. By the way, betting golf is really fun, I hear. The odds are just fantastic. BetOnline, go over there today. Use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet using the code CLNS50. You know the code CLNS50. Receive 50% back on your first welcome deposit. Put in 100, get 50 back. That's BetOnline. This is Dome Theory. I know you all saw the Grant Williams video. Went to the Junior Celtics camp right over by their practice facility on Friday. Was expecting to just be taking video, get a few quotes from him. And he pulled me and Sherrod into the shooting competition. John Corrales did not want to get involved in all that. So I'm like, what am I going to get a chance to shoot and not do it? Kids are shooting, going back and forth. I guess it was who gets the most makes. And clock's ticking down. I guess the other team had three. Me and Grant's team had two. Finally get my first kids. The kids were cutting in front of us. So got my first shot. Really great pass from whoever had the mic, was running the camp there. Hit me right in my hands. Ball felt great. Awesome grip. I'd been shooting all week. Got this new form down that I feel really good about. Had a great week playing. And, you know, went with the low release. Got it up there, and nothing but net. I couldn't believe it, man. I never hit threes, by the way. I'm not a shooter. But on that day, in that moment, I was. And Grant's team went on to win the competition. So there's that story. If you haven't seen that, go check it out on Celtics All Access, as well as Grant's interview, which was interesting. I put some quotes from that up on Boston Sports Journal. Some Patriots coverage, as I said, coming for CLNS Media this week. And we'll keep an eye on the Durant front for now. Here is Justin Rowan on Dome Theory. Go get us on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, everywhere you get your podcasts. I think we'll do a couple episodes this week. Try to find some, you know, off-topic interviews. I think I got a few people in mind. So stay tuned. Dome Theory on Twitter, Facebook as well. And, of course, CLNS Media on YouTube. Here is Dome Theory 88. Good friend of the show, Justin Rowan, is back. And we're just going to dive into some late August conversation here. I think I'm going to sneak away next week maybe for a mini vacation and hope that the Kevin Durant cards don't fall into place. I don't think they're going to, Justin, but
I think you're going to be safe on that one.
4-5 weeks into the saga now, maybe pushing 6 here on Sunday. It never ends. Doesn't look like there's an easy conclusion to this. Over the last week or so, we saw him demand that the Nets fire Sean Marks, Steve Nash. We kicked around that quite a bit. But the thing I find more interesting now is him, seems like, through the Shams Report, SNY, some of these other outlets, angling for destinations. Now, Celtics, 76ers among them,
I'm still waiting to hear the Raptors and Pelicans become more definitive destinations for him, because it seems like they actually have stuff to give up that could fit the Nets' needs here. But Celtics, we've had the conversation a million times. Jaylen Brown, you include Smart or not, Rob's off the table, it seems like. And Sixers, I don't know, Maxey, Thybulle, they don't have many picks. That seems like a tough fit there. So we're stuck on this thing, and we're just going to keep kicking it around until training camp, and maybe even longer, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the betting odds right now have Boston as the favorite and Toronto as number two, which makes sense to me, that those teams would kind of be the favorites. I think Jaylen Brown is the best asset that's available by a pretty wide margin. But at the same time, you have to factor in the reality that you can't really offer Jaylen an extension. Like, it's if you try to extend him, it's not going to be for the kind of money that he deserves. So I think that's something that Brooklyn has to kind of factor into these talks. I don't understand Philly. I don't really see any world where that's a realistic possibility that they could go out and get KD. I just don't see the assets being there.
Yeah, and that extension you talked about with Brown, 20% off salary, said it'd be $36 million in the first year, when he would potentially be eligible for it with an All-NBA appearance, as much as $50 million a year. So that's something that would happen next summer, that designated veteran extension with him. But right now it's 36, 39, 42, 41, 65. That's even less than another team could offer him on the market. So that's why we're not going to see a Jaylen extension this summer in PA. And, you know, the Jaylen leaving stuff, we'll get into that in a little bit. I don't think that's as big of a consideration here when it comes to the Durant pursuit. I think it's all about, is Durant much better than Brown today, that you'd be that much closer to a championship? Because I think the value of one, you know, maybe even two, it's hard to build a dynasty now. Everything fits into place the way that the Warriors had it go there. The value of one or two is immense. So I think you do that pushes you significantly closer to that point. But when you look at Boston, you look at what they did last year. I don't think we've had this conversation yet. Is it worth looking into this? Is it worth doing this? It depends on the price, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah, I think it depends on the price. And I think the fact that Boston went out and added Derek White, they added Malcolm Brogdon, it kind of makes it a little easier to stomach some form of a consolidation trade if it's Brown and picks, for example. It depends on their confidence level that they can keep Jaylen Brown, right? That he is going to extend beyond the contract, which I think if you're Boston, you have to feel pretty good about that. Like, you have one of the best wing tandems and young wing tandems in the NBA, if not the best wing tandem in the NBA, in he and Tatum. I do think, like, when you use the word dynasty, this wouldn't be that. This is kind of pushing in the chips to go out and get one title, I think, more so than you kind of have to weigh. Do I want like a 50% chance at a title over the next 4 years, or do I want a like 70% chance at a title over the next two? And I think that's the math that you have to kind of factor into this situation.
For you, from a Cavs perspective, the possibility that Celtics could stack up Durant, Tatum, Smart, like, is that would that be a team that just wouldn't be able in the East? You know, whether it's Cleveland, whether it's Philly, whether it's any of those fellow contenders, Miami, Milwaukee.
I think Milwaukee would have a chance to beat them still. They have so much length, and I think at this point Giannis is the best player in basketball, so you always have to give that a bit of consideration. From a Cavs perspective, no, I wouldn't worry about that, because the Cavs aren't on that level yet, right? They're still a couple of years away from kind of getting into that more serious mix. I think this upcoming season is about learning how much you can win now with what you have, and then start asking some questions next offseason and evaluating how much you want to invest in winning now. But at the end of the day, Darius Garland's 22, Evan Mobley's 20. Like, you just don't win at that age in the NBA. And these guys are still kind of like 3 years away from their primes, or entering their primes in the case of Darius Garland. Mobley's probably about 5 or 6 years away from his prime. So from a timeline standpoint, no, it doesn't concern me that the Celtics would be going all in. I mean, I want to avoid being the 7 or 8 seed so I don't have to get like steamrolled by that team, because I think they'd be ridiculously good with Durant. But no, win now moves from contenders don't really concern me, because I think the Cavs are on a bit of a different timeline.
That's interesting. I do want to get into the Cavs. When it comes to that shorter window you're talking about with Durant, the alternative, and again, back to that Brown contract, would be a longer window with him and Tatum here. So they can potentially extend Tatum next summer, because he's 3 summers away right now from free agency. Brown to offer Tatum after an all-NBA season next year up to $300 million, which would push him through about like 2029, 2030. Same goes for Brown. He can either lock in at $248 without all-NBA, or close to $300 with all-NBA, but that would take away free agency from him, which is going to be an interesting decision for him ultimately. But with that money, you know, that'd be about $100 million difference if he is all-NBA versus leaving. It's good incentives to stay. Like, they're still going to be pretty good in a couple of years, you would think, with this core. Tatum and Brown stay together through the end of the, you know, no matter what's around them. Maybe Horford's still around at the end of his career. You have Brogdon, you have Smart. This is going to be a good team, and probably the best bet for Brown to compete with, at least until that next contract, the one after that, which would be around 30 years old. Probably still get a good contract at 30 years old. So you feel good about keeping this team together, I think, for a decent amount of time here if you don't do this move. And listen, they've had a good offseason. I don't know what your thoughts have been on it, but Brogdon, I think, coming in at that price, Gallinari, I don't love him as a player, but at that price, he'll take him. And,
right, you know, and especially when you just need depth, right? Like, he's someone that can eat some minutes out there. He can hit some shots. Like, I think Boston had a fantastic offseason, honestly. Like, I think bringing in Brogdon for the price that they got him for was a steal. I still really like the Derek White trade. And I think actually having an offseason and a training camp would make a big difference for the Celtics. So I'm excited for Boston. I think, as is, they should be very content and happy with what's going on. But you still kind of have to weigh the KD situation, and especially if other teams in the Eastern Conference are getting into the running for KD.
Yeah, definitely. And Toronto's that one. I was looking at it yesterday. I was looking at it for my column that I put out each week around the league, and they're in an interesting spot, I feel like. And that'd be the team that you're getting KD potentially if you're Boston. Again, we'll get to the Cavs in a second in terms of like how this hierarchy is going to stack up here. But if they really want to hold Scottie Barnes like they do, you have 7 first round picks to throw on the table. You know, maybe you could hash out how many of those you actually want to give up. You've wanted to give up Siakam, right, for an amount of time, and then he has that bounce back season last year, so maybe that changes the thinking on that. But
I don't know if they've wanted
sort
to
of
give
a no-brainer.
Up Siakam.
He was in trade talks there after the, you know, unstable season.
Well, you could theoretically say that about Jaylen Brown too, right? Like, he's been rumored at the same level to be in trade talks over the last 3-4 years, basically.
Yeah, for stars. But I felt like the Siakam thing was more them like floating, all right, what could we pretend? And before they actually had a surprisingly good season without Lowry there, and, you know, with the group that they did here. So he was really good. He was third team all NBA, right? And so he bounced back in a way that they have to love. This team was great. You know, they went with this like no center battle, and then they end up playing Philly. So that's just that was going to work out very well. But you add Durant to that mix, swap him out for Siakam. That makes a lot of sense. Those depth wings you would be giving up with Gary Trent and OG, who, again, another guy who potentially they were looking at moving here anyway. It's a lot of depth to give up. But again, Toronto is not going to be like that otherwise. This is almost a Kawhi conversation all over again, with years on the contract. So I'm surprised I haven't seen Toronto looking into this more than they seem.
Well, as I said at the top, they are second in the odds right now. So I think they're definitely in that mix. Toronto's just a team that doesn't really leak a whole bunch. I think they kind of move in silence. So if they could do it without giving up Scottie Barnes, and you're looking at like Fred VanVleet, Scottie, Siakam, Precious, and you know, giving up OG and Gary Trent Jr. with a bunch of picks, that would be great. Personally, I do have to wonder if Phoenix could still beat that offer, though. Like, if you're talking about just those two, because straight up, Mikal Bridges versus OG, you have more team control with Mikal Bridges. I think he's a slightly better player, and you don't have the same history of injuries that OG has. And then Cam Johnson versus Gary Trent Jr. Gary Trent Jr. has got a player option after this season. He can walk, and I don't know if Brooklyn feels confident that they can retain him, especially in a summer where a lot of teams, half the league has cap space. So I think that would need to go into the calculus when you're looking at team control versus Cam Johnson and Gary Trent Jr. And then obviously the Mikal OG aspect of that. So if the picks are equal and you're also looking at which team do I count on to be bad in the near future, Toronto or Phoenix, Masai Ujiri or Robert Sarver, Chris Paul and KD versus all the young guys in Toronto, I think I would bank on Phoenix being bad at some point over the next 8 years or whatever stretch you're getting those picks for. So I think Phoenix can beat any Toronto offer if Scottie Barnes is not in that offer.
So they'd have to get to January for that, though, right? Because of this Ayton situation, he signs that offer sheet. He would.
Oh, no, I'm not even talking about with Ayton in it. I'm saying if it was Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson versus OG and Gary Trent Jr. and picks, right?
I don't know. I never loved the Suns offer to begin with, because I'm with Ayton if you're them, if Ayton's in that conversation. So now you drop it down to Bridges, who's really good. Like, I think he's fit within the context of that team, defensive player, can hit shots, can do a lot of different things for you. But this is the tough part. Like, the Nets want to have something to work with if they're moving. They'll feasibly be moving on from Kyrie, too. You got Simmons, you got Bridges, you got some of those other role players you kicked around there. Like, that's probably not even a play-in team in the East, especially.
Yeah.
So you get all those picks, which you feel good about, but that's just kind of making up for this Harden trade. This is what makes the Nets so stuck here. It's such a screwed up situation. You don't know what Simmons is giving you beyond this. They might even move him to try to get a guy like Bam in there because of the way these contracts line up. They can't play. Mitchell could maybe be a guy that would come back in that case, but I don't know. Like, they're selling Durant pretty low for Bridges, I think. Like, that's where it comes back. He's still the best guy here by far. If you're the Celtics, can you just give up Brown and little else because of how good that centerpiece is? Because Brown and Bridges, at least the first echelon wise in the league.
It definitely is. And I was just talking specifically like the Toronto offer without Scottie Barnes versus the Phoenix offer without Ayton, right? So I think if I'm weighing those two, I would lean Phoenix. Although, if you're talking Boston, they can beat either of those offers by just putting Jaylen Brown in. Although, from a team control standpoint, and you look at the future that Brooklyn has, which isn't that bright, I think I would probably value Scottie over Jaylen just because of the team control aspects, that Jaylen is going to be an unrestricted free agent. But at the end of the day, I don't know if Toronto's going to do that. It would be really kind of selling the young core aspect of what they have and going all in on the Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam timeline. So again, that would be a shortening of their window there. And I guess the leverage that Brooklyn does have, beyond the fact that KD is under team control for so long, is, hey, we have multiple teams that are kind of in the playoff mix or already in the contending mix in the Eastern Conference competing against one another. And if one of them pulls the trigger and gets the deal done, that's going to have an impact on every other team in that race, right? So you can kind of play that from a leverage standpoint.
Yeah, I guess the only other contender we didn't talk about was Miami, but I don't know.
They don't have anything enough, offered. We don't even need to talk about Miami.
I mean, like
Miami,
the Lakers.
Well, you're talking about Toronto wanting to trade Pascal Siakam. Miami's been trying to move Tyler Hero since they drafted him, basically. So I don't think that he's got that kind of value.
And Miami never gets the Boston. Oh, Boston's been trying to trade Brown forever. How's he going to be? Miami has thrown Hero. This is almost like the Lakers, like THT Nunn pick thing from last year. Like, Hero, Robinson, and a pick.
But last year they put Hero in like a fake six man role where he was like second in minutes per game on the team, but you know, had him come off the bench so he could get one accolade and help his trade value. You know that, so maybe teams value him differently now. I don't.
I was looking at Oladipo's contract too. I don't like Miami. This is the thing about Miami. You look at their roster and you're like, eh, it's good. You know, you got Butler. He's been amazing, especially in the playoffs. Bam.
Their biggest advantage is coaching. Their biggest advantage is coaching because they get
You get the Vincent and the Strus stuff. Yeah,
exactly. You get the absolute most out of every single one of those players. And even if they make mistakes, they'll find undrafted guys. They will find guys to add depth and make that team competitive. So I'm always going to give Miami a bit of the benefit of the doubt. But when you talk about getting into this type of a trade for Kevin Durant, I don't think they got the bullets in the chamber.
Would Mitchell make sense for them?
A bit.
That Lowry thing screwed them up. Like, he's going to get back on his feet as a player. They're in some trouble with that contract.
Yeah, I didn't love that contract when they gave it to him. I know Toronto is probably kicking themselves a little bit that they didn't do the deal at the deadline, moving Kyle Lowry to Miami, because Miami ended up offering a lot less. And I think there were reports that Hero was even offered at that time. There was also reports that the Sixers had offered Maxey for Kyle Lowry.
You had a Lakers offer way back when too.
Yeah, it turned Toronto was holding out for Thibault with Maxey, which is hilarious in hindsight. So I think Toronto missed some good opportunities there. But at least from a Miami perspective, that stopped it from being as disastrous as it is. But that contract sucks. And if they could get into the Donovan Mitchell mix, that would be interesting. But it seems like Utah is really valuing draft picks. I mean, there's reports that they don't even really have an interest in RJ Barrett coming back. So I think it's safe to assume that they wouldn't have a ton of interest in Tyler Hero, who is going to be owed money soon. You have to wonder about how happy he would be in Utah. There's a lot going on. So unless they maybe find a third team that's really high on Hero and is willing to give a bunch of picks to Utah, I can't really see that one working out.
That's the other thing. Hero's extension eligible now, which is he's not a max guy, is he?
No. Below that. No, I mean, you never know what teams are going to give out. I mean, I look at the Simons deal and I have to wonder what's going on in the NBA right now. But at the same time, like I don't think he's worth it if that's the question.
Yeah. Simons 24-25 ish a year. Hero could get that, I think. Which is NBA. Like, that's just more money on Miami's books. Does that become a movable contract? Certainly not this year with the poison pill. So they're holding out on that. But he might end up hitting restricted free agency and they could squeeze him there. I don't know. Like, again, I look at Miami's situation. I'm like, this isn't great. And then next year, they're going to be the one seed and looking awesome, which is kind of how it goes down there. So that's Miami. The Nets. If we're just going to talk about them and their perspective here, like, the conventional thinking seemed to be they could just run this back, force these guys into camp. They've made some good moves, right? Like Royce O'Neal, maybe you pay a little bit much there with the first, but it was a Philly first, so that's fair value.
But is Royce an improvement over Bruce Brown? I don't know. I don't think so.
Shooting-wise, yeah, but other stuff. Brown was really good, and apparently they didn't offer him anything. According to that little like exchange he had in summer league there, which was weird. They brought back Patty Mills. Like, I'd rather have Brown than Mills. Yeah, that was a weird move. They bring back these centers like Claxton. They got Sharp. It's an okay roster. You got to think about like what's Kyrie gonna be after all the back and forth this summer. He's got to prove it, right? Like, he's got to actually make himself a legitimate free agent target next year. So I imagine he'll kind of be on his best behavior. But Durant doesn't want to be there at all, it seems. And this latest exchange seems to point toward the Kyrie contract being the issue, right? Because he wants Marks fired. I don't get the Nash angle at all. Like, he obviously wasn't a good coach, but these guys seem to choose him. So, I don't know. The Nets fans are saying, you're going to pick Nash and Marks over Durant? Are you crazy? But there's more to it than that. Like, they have made every single move these guys have wanted. And this would just be the latest example of going with these guys on a whim, whether it's Harden, whether it's the Allen Jordan thing or Atkinson. I get putting your foot down, but at the end of the day, you want to try to bring these guys back into the fold here. And if that's the only way, I don't know. I like Marks as a GM. I really do, but it's tough. Like, star GM, is Durant even going to be here next year if you move on from Irving at that point? It's an impossible situation.
Is Durant going to want to be there if you do move on from Sean Marks and Nash, right? Like, if it still doesn't work out a year
from now. Well,
that's
interesting. So he was hanging out with Harden at the Travis Scott show. We know how Harden got out of Houston, his little ultimatum there. It was this Harden's advice on accelerating the process of getting out of Brooklyn.
No. you're going way too far down the rabbit hole here. I don't think... I kind of get it. Like, I guess Joe Tsai doesn't believe in being pot committed. That we've already gone so in on Kyrie and KD. Like, at some point, even if they run it back, like, if KD isn't all the way invested, or there's such a thin margin for error and the Eastern Conference is so competitive, and I think it really improved this offseason, you kind of have to weigh your options. If you can get a big haul that helps you in the long term, that might be what's best for the franchise if they don't feel they can contend as is, right? KD is kind of at that point, similar to where LeBron was, where it's, is this worthwhile to have this guy around if we don't have a realistic chance at competing for a title? They were not a good team last year, and I think obviously there were a lot of factors that went into that, but you're also talking about guys that have had injury history in recent years. You don't know what their availability is going to be. I need to see Ben Simmons on the court before I count him as anything. I think
they don't
theoretically
seem too excited about that.
yeah, right. So honestly, like I don't know. Even if they do run it back, would you put down money that they're not going to be in the play-in? Like I think when you look at chemistry and continuity and just how competitive the Eastern Conference is going to be, it's a pretty thin margin if either of those guys miss time that they're back in that mix. And if you're in that play-in mix, you have to go out and face a very improved Boston team, a very good Milwaukee team. Like, one of those two teams is going to be waiting for you. And I don't think that's a lot of fun.
No, especially if you're on the bottom end of that. And you're right, they could end up in the play-in. At the top, if we're talking those top four seeds, like Celtics, Bucks, that's a shoe-in. Philly's close, I feel like, if Embiid's Embiid, although
they'll be third. They'll be third, I think.
And then Miami's up there.
Yep.
Like, as is. And then there's teams like, who's going to take a leap? Like, it could be the Cavs, Bulls healthy, or were pretty good last year. Raptors are in that mix. So that's six right there. Maybe even more.
You didn't even mention the Cavs, who were a half game out of
the Cavs. You know, I love the Cavs.
Who were a half game out of the one seed at the All-Star break and only got 40 games of Allen, Mobley, and Garland last year. Like, there's a lot of teams that are going to be in that mix. Atlanta's improved with DeJounte Murray. Like, it's going to be really, really thin margins. And even if you're looking at the top four, like, I think the top three are pretty locked in. But if Miami has Jimmy Butler miss time or Bam miss time, they could fall down the standings a little bit, because I think that's a team that understands that they're playing for the postseason and they have a level of confidence that we can go out and win a road playoff game. So they're probably going to take a long-term approach versus some of these younger teams that are looking to prove something, that are looking to avoid the play-in, maybe potentially compete for home court in the playoffs because that is a meaningful milestone for them. I would say teams like Chicago, Cleveland, Atlanta, Toronto are all in that mix. I could easily see them overtaking a team like Miami in the regular season.
What is your prediction with the Durant? Is he on the Nets opening night? Does a deal get done? Does he play? Is he holding out?
I think maybe around camp he gets moved. Like, that's just kind of the way that this stuff plays out. We'll see how much of a bidding war there is, but I honestly have no real feel for it. I'd love to see him get out of the Eastern Conference. Like, if Phoenix can find a way to get it done, like, go ahead. I don't love this Eastern Conference arms race. So if that's the way it plays out, that's the way it plays out. But
that would be, I can't see it, but that would, imagine Ayton, Booker, Paul and Durant. That'd be some firepower there for sure. I don't think that's enough coming back to Brooklyn. I do want to get to. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I don't think so either. But at the end of the day, I don't really mind any of the teams at the top of the Eastern Conference like really going all in for Durant either, because anything that shortens their window and makes it maybe a little more palpable for the Cavs to be competitive in like 2-3 years, for selfish reasons, I'm open to that as well.
I want to get to the Cavs. If anyone's down for some Cavaliers talk here, I got a lot of stuff on them. They're going to be interesting this year. They're going to be really good, I think. This guy doesn't seem like J.B. Bickerstaff, which I haven't heard before.
you'll get it every now and then, because at the end of the day, every single fan base hates the rotations of their roster. And it's
not
like,
enough Dean Wade.
It's kind of like the backup quarterback conversation in the NFL. Like the most popular player on every team is the backup quarterback. If you don't have a legitimate one. So I think it's, you know, the stuff in the margins. But you look at the Cavs being one of the youngest teams in the NBA last year, the number of injuries that they had, as I mentioned, Garland Allen and Mobley only getting 40 games together last year. I think only Orlando was the only other team in the Eastern Conference that had more man games missed than the Cavs last season. So the fact that they got to 44 wins last year, I think a lot of credit does need to go to the coaching staff for navigating those injuries.
So real quick, Athletic Greens, of course, has been a great sponsor for the Garden Report as the offseason pushes along here. Very fitting. We've all been using it. We all throw that scoop in our water every morning. That's all it really is. This powder's got vitamin, minerals, whole food source ingredients, probiotics, adaptogens, everything you need for your diet, essentially, here for digestion, energy. And it's simple. You know, just have it in that bottle. It's a sharp looking bottle each morning. Pour it in, tastes great, tropical flavor. And you're basically getting everything you need there, really simply. And all things considered, this stuff all costs a lot individually. So to get it in one powder, immune, supporting, everything you basically need to get your health right, they're going to give you, with this subscription here, a year supply of vitamin D, as well as 5 free travel packs. So go get that, athleticgreens.com/garden. That's athleticgreens.com/garden. Take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. And you send your receipt over to John Zanis, he'll get you a Garden Report t-shirt. So appreciate you supporting them, supporting Dome Theory as well. Let's get into some Cavaliers talk here. Everyone's talking Durant. Colin Sexton's still a free agent. Latest I saw, a $40 million offer is out there, which isn't great, but it's something, and it's long-term money, and it's better than the qualifying offer if he ended up getting hurt or something like that. So I don't know. You think the Cavs are going to stand hard there and just roll without him if he doesn't accept it? Is he going to take that qualifying offer, which I think is $7 million-ish? We haven't seen him since early last season, and the Cavs did pretty well without him. But it wouldn't be a bad guy to have off the bench there. Once scored over 20 points per game, albeit in a bigger role, shoots well, scores well. Bit of a microwave guy for this team. He'd make them a little bit more impressive roster-wise if he's back, even for just 1 year. On a bit of a prove it deal. So how do you think that's going to end up being resolved?
Yeah, and the other thing last year was he showed legitimate growth on the defensive end of the court. All the metrics went way up with him on that end, which I thought was really encouraging. I think the important thing to note when you talk about like the reported offer is that's the amount the Cavs have right now between them and the luxury tax. So that's the max that can be offered without starting to get into that repeater tax. The other factor is they have 15 players on their roster right now. So something has to, even if he's come back on the qualifying offer, they have to make a move at some point to clear up a roster spot for him. So I think when that move occurs, you'll have an idea of how much more can be offered while staying under the luxury tax. Because Cavs have historically not been a team that has been shy about spending. But at the same time, you don't want to start triggering that repeater tax when you're still probably a couple of years away. So I think you look at the roster and some of the guys like Jetty Osman, Dylan Windler, even like a Lamar Stevens or Dean Wade on non-guaranteed contracts, you could kind of look at them. So I would kind of like my guess has been it's basically going to be a Gary Trent Jr. situation where it's a 2+1 with a player option kind of come up when you do make that roster move, if you're able to move Jetty Osman into space, for example, that dramatically increases the amount that you can offer Sexton. So maybe like Bogdanovich kind of money would be the way it plays out. But I do think the Cavs would have been a much better team last year if they did have Sexton in the mix.
So it's been painted, and I don't know, are they going to pay tax next year? Because it's been painted as LeVert versus Sexton, essentially here. Like, which one of those two are you going to pick? And when, like, if you end up saying LeVert didn't work out, you gave up Rubio, you gave up a pick that's not even going to be a first-round pick. It wasn't, rather. So you didn't pay a ton for him. You tried it out, and maybe Sexton ends up being that better fit. But is there a possibility that they can keep both of those guys?
I think going into this season, yeah. Moving forward, I don't know if that's going to be the case. You have to kind of figure it would be one or the other. And right now it does seem like Sexton's the one being prioritized. And some of that's probably because he's a free agent while LeVert still has another year on his contract. But the organization has said consistently that they want Sexton back, that he was the one that started turning around the culture. Kobe Altman's spoken very highly of him. I don't think they're going to go into the luxury tax this year. It's just so hard to kind of start that repeater clock at this point of the team building process. So I think you'd go into this year, LeVert's probably the starter because Sexton's coming off that injury. It's going to take him time to kind of get his legs under him. But in a vacuum, assuming that Sexton can get back to where he was at pre-injury, he's the better player. He's the younger player. Darius Garland is very close with him as well. All of that kind of has to factor in. So, like I said before, I think this is the year to find out how much you can win now with what you have. And then in the off season, you evaluate, okay, where are we at? How much internal growth did we get from Sexton, from Okoro, from Garland, Mobley, Allen, right? Lauri Markkanen, all these guys under 25 years old, how much did they improve? And do we look at making a consolidation trade? It's very possible that they even look to make a consolidation trade at the deadline this year. If, let's say, you do get Sexton on a multi-year deal, or even if you don't, you could look at making a consolidation trade because you know Ricky Rubio is going to be coming back at that point. You have Howell Neto. Maybe Isaac Okoro takes a step forward. I think people write him off a little too quickly when he's only a couple months older than Mobley. Like, I think people forget that he's just 20 years old. And you look at after December, he was shooting 50% from the floor and 38% from three while being one of the better on-ball defenders in the NBA. So if he can turn up the volume on what he was doing there, that's going to make a difference. What does Ochai Agbaji look like? Like, you know,
that's a little battle right there, those two, because Agbaji's coming in with some three-point prowess. Low, and this is so low on his podcast, breaking down Okoro's actual three-point prowess, because he was among the least guarded guys at the three-point year, so the percentage wasn't as impressive when you actually look at, like,
the volume was wildly low, but I'm just saying, like, going from the rookie year, the fact that he increased the field goal percentage by 6%, he increased the three-point percentage by 6%, the free throw percentage came up, like, for a guy that when they were drafted, like, Jonathan Givony had him third on his big board and said, it's going to take 3-4 years for the offense to get here. So seeing some growth from one year to the next, especially when he didn't have a regular offseason, is encouraging. So I just wouldn't write him off as a viable option. I'm a bit of an Okoro centrist. I'm not super high on him, but all the reports are this guy's a crazy, crazy worker. The offseason reporting has been that he's had a very good offseason as well, that they're very encouraged by the growth that he's showing. The analogy I'd kind of put it at is if you're playing poker, you got a good hand, the flop is really good, and you have a lot of outs. Like, you got Garland, Mobley, and Allen, and you just need like one or two of these other guys to hit, whether it's Agbaji, Okoro, Sexton, LeVert, Lowry, any of those guys, if they can establish themselves as a legitimate fourth on this team, or even a couple guys hit and all of a sudden you're in a better position to make a consolidation trade and you have all your future first round picks next offseason, you can start to get aggressive and look at maybe making that the kind of move that will align with your window and put you into an upper echelon within the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, and so you look at that Levert deal. Do you stack on long-term money there? Legend in a year? That deal's finally over there.
That's a massive expiring contract. Levert's massive expiring contract. Jetty's deal is non-guaranteed beyond this season. Like, there's a lot of expiring contracts. There's a lot of picks that they have moving forward. And quite a few players under 25 years old outside of the core three. So they should have a lot of flexibility. And you also have to factor in, like, depending on what happens from a contract situation, they could have near max money in free agency next offseason. So that's something you have to factor in as well.
Yeah, it's just who do you target? Because two off seasons, your brand dream's out there. You could have space in 2 years for that brand.
Exactly.
Dream. I don't know what's up next summer. Like, they're just, well, every year there's fewer and fewer big, like, is Draymond Green going to be the name of free agency next summer? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's like, if you're looking at the small forward position, it's not great. Like, obviously, at the top, it's LeBron, then Andrew Wiggins, Harrison Barnes.
Oh, like, do we want to revisit the LeBron conversation?
I mean, if he's willing to take a little less and, like, just join what they already have, that would be a pretty good team. I'm not gunning the roster to, like, clear space to add him, but if he's willing to sign, you know, around like the 30 instead of like 45, that would be pretty exciting.
I can't. That was my dream at one point coming together, but I just can't see it at this point. In fact, it almost seems like LeBron's going to extend with that.
I think he's going to extend. Yeah, I think he's going to extend. So maybe it's the return of Andrew Wiggins instead. Maybe that's the way that this goes.
You like that idea?
They add Andrew.
I've heard a little rumbling to that. Yeah.
I wouldn't hate that. I wouldn't hate that at all.
He was finals. He really was. Every play, he was going downhill, finishing at the basket, shoots 45%, big shots. I think he was big on the close too in the series. It's unbelievable what that ended up becoming for them. And mm-hmm. He's probably the odd man out there, right? When we're looking at those four names, Green, Poole.
Possible.
Green. Because they're not going to, like, Steph wants them to keep the guys, right? Like, the guys who have won it, who have been part of that core. Like, last couple of days, like, oh, maybe the Pistons can go get Draymond. Like, if this whole Warriors thing ends with Draymond going to the Pistons, feel weird to me. But they're ultimately going to have to make a best for their luxury tax situation and their ability to contend moving forward. So maybe he does end up being the odd man out, because he was awesome at the end of that series. People were benched at the beginning end of it. Like, he was not great offensively in that series, and he's been going downhill offensively for a little while out here, but he's in their defense. So Wiggins could shake free, and that'd be next summer, as you said. So that'd be the kind of guy you'd look at with Cleveland if they do have space here. So that's why I'm intrigued by LeVert. Probably, I'd imagine Sexton's back on the qualifying, right?
Yeah, that's just what he's gonna have to do. If not that, I would guess a 2+1. I think right now they're kind of waiting to see how these other moves around the NBA shake out. Like, is there an opportunity to clear some roster spots and some salary by getting involved in the Durant or Mitchell trade? And like, even if it's like, you know, Jetty and Windler for Rudy Gay, like that clears up a few million dollars and a roster spot and kind of take some long-term money off the books for Utah. Like, something like that could change the amount that they could offer Sexton, and that could change the calculus as well. So I'd probably guess 2+1, but I think it'd be foolish to not recognize that the qualifying option is a realistic possibility at this point.
So I love this team coming in the next year. If he's there, we kicked around some of the other names. Mobley takes a step. I still can't believe Mobley didn't win Rookie of the Year. Like, I think people just got bored of his success early. Barnes came along.
Recency bias definitely factored in, as well as Toronto kind of overtaking Cleveland in that last.
And the defense factor, right? Like, people just weren't able to gauge how impactful he was. It'd be like an offensive guy coming in and scoring 20 points a game right away. That's kind of the defender he was. Yeah. So I'm stunned. Doesn't matter though. They still have him on this rookie deal. He's still going to be the centerpiece for them. Allen feels a little bit underrated still. Looking at some of his monsters. The numbers from him last year as a rim protect, like percentage of rim shots contested and rim contest blocks, all that stuff. He's up near the 90th percentile.
Yep.
rim defensive field goal percentage versus 100th percentile. To the case, this guy's the best rim protector in the league. And you got all that size. You got Garland coming along is one of the most improved. You don't seem to think they're on the edge of contending right now, though. Like, I could actually see this team, if everything goes right, making this finals run. If everything goes right.
Yeah, I just have a lot of respect for the value of experience in the NBA. And when you look at the teams at the top of the Eastern Conference, I just give them a nod. Like, I give Boston a lot of credit. I give Milwaukee a ton of credit.
Philly, the Bucks could be really good.
Yeah, the Bucks are going to be awesome. Philly is still really good as well.
If that Harden thing goes sideways, they're in trouble.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. Like, there are avenues there, and it's possible that coming off the internal growth they had last year, that they have another leap, right? And they kind of, the names that you mentioned kind of vault them into the Memphis type regular season where all of a sudden they're up there in that mix. That'd be a lot of fun because I think you could make a case that realistically the Cavs could have three top 10 players at their position in Garland, Mobley, and Allen next season. Like, yeah. I think that's not a totally unrealistic statement. And if they have another few of these other pieces hit, that could make a big difference. But I think when you get to the postseason, even if you do have a great regular season, it's just so different. And I think this was one of the real missed opportunities last year. It's so different game planning to play the same opponent night after night over the course of a week or two, right? Versus in the regular season where teams aren't really like, they're scouting you, but they're not designing a game plan to play you specifically. And I think not getting that opportunity, even if they got swept, even if they made the playoffs and got swept last year, I think that would have been a really valuable experience. But then you look on the other hand, and adding Ochai Agbaji could make a really big difference. And even if their destiny this season is getting like the sixth seed, losing in a few games to one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, but you get that internal growth, you have some of these other young guys step up, That's not the end of the world for me, because I do think that this should be a long term plan when it comes to the Cavs. But like you said, there is a very clear path to internal growth, accelerating this process. But I'm just not going to count my chickens before they've hatched when it comes to that, as much as I'm still kind of riding off the high of last season. And it's really encouraging to see the offseason hype videos from Garland and Mobley. And like you said, Allen's not only is he one of the best defensive players at his position at 24 years old, he took a massive step forward on the offensive end. And that's a big part of why he was an all-star last season. So if you take that starting lineup that had damn near the worst spacing in the NBA, when you look at like B-ball index's like spacing context, I think Garland was in the 10th percentile for spacing last year around him. The fact that that trio worked so well without spacing, and now you're adding guys like Agbaji and Lowry is going to have another year working to play at the three, and maybe Okoro takes a step forward. And Sexton was a big part of why they were lacking spacing last year, because he was one of their better shooters. You factor all of that in, and it's easy to see how they could take another significant step forward.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. The shooting, it's not great still. Like, you're going to need some jumps. You're going to need that Agbaji impact right away. You're going to need some LeVert semblance of anything out there. You're going to need Sexton doing what he did a couple of years ago from three. Some of those Love minutes. Like, they're going to have to get creative here in terms of producing some offensively potent lineups, because that starting lineup, like you said, it's a lot on Garland. It's not much spacing. Markkanen, not quite the four space you expected him to be coming into this league. It gets a little jammed at times. We had this conversation before on Markkanen, and we're going to do it again.
Yeah. I think Lowry had a lot of gravity last season and made a big difference. And I definitely think, and this is one of the interesting things, I think a major factor as well is he practiced, and like the game plan going into last season was to play the power forward position. And then it took some adjusting to playing small forward. But you look at the post All-Star break where he played basically 25 games, averaging 17 points a game, shooting 38% from three. Like, he had a lot of impact there. And I think if you're putting Agbaji next to him or LeVert, who, you know, isn't a reliable shooter, but shot well on catch and shoots. I think catch and shoot threes, he was at 41% last year. Like, if he can be even at 38% and you're getting Sexton and Okoro takes another step forward offensively, you can manufacture a decent amount of spacing there. But I think Agbaji is clearly one of the parts that is most exciting, because that kind of quick catch and shoot, easy trigger, long arms, like, can shoot off of screens, can shoot off of movement. Like, he was one of the best shooters in the draft, and someone that can contribute on both ends of the floor. And they didn't have someone like that. So if I had to guess, I think he's going to earn pretty meaningful minutes this year.
So let's end this with Jalen. Cavaliers will be good next year. I think we both agree on that. Just how good's the question. Jalen, though, man, do I love him. Great player. He just continues to get better. He's got this Kanye thing going on. He's in the Yeezy Gap commercial. I love what he does off the floor. And on the floor, in the finals, look at these stats. And I remember him just trying to power them back in game six as the Warriors were running away from that. Finishes with 24, you know, almost three more than Tatum, two more exactly, rather. Seven rebounds per game, nearly four assists per game. His playmaking did take strides. Didn't have a great shooting season, but I think he was adapting more to having the ball in his hands. And then, you know, shot free throws pretty good in the finals, even though that had been an issue for him. I just remember the ups and downs of last year for him. And you said he's been in trade talks in the past. This one feels a little different. I caught up with Grant Williams 2 days ago now, I believe. And, you know, he's kind of given some credence to the reports. Like, there's a significant rumor. We've reached out to him. You don't know how this is impacting Brown if you're us. But it does seem like they're trying to keep their mind on the season and away from this rumor, which just doesn't seem to go away. The Brown-Tatum thing, it was a question for a little while, right? Can these guys play together? I think they answered it last year, and I think that they can continue to build off that. But those two do have their pitfalls offensively, too, when it comes to the turnovers, when it comes to the ball control, facilitating, all that. You'd love to keep this together. You really would. But at the end of the day, that 2024 class, he could be the biggest name out there. Is he getting meetings? Is he getting courted with presentations on a different kind of side? That's feasibly the player he could become. And I think the factor that everyone's leaving out, it's not about him being in trade talks. It's not about him, you know, not working with Tatum or having issues with him or anything like that. He's just so good. He might look at it in 2 years and say, I can run my own team. I can have my own city. Because this is always going to be Tatum City in Boston. That's just where it's at right now. You have your Brown fans. I think the Celtics fans love Brown. Like 80-85%, I would say, do not want to do this Durant thing. Because they like Brown. But
I don't know. Like, do you think he'd really be in the running to kind of have his own team type of guy? Like, I think he's probably a number two. Like, I think most of the teams that would have interest in him would be looking to pair him in that way. Like, unless he looks at like Bradley Beal and is envious of the situation he has, like, I don't see a lot of situations where he would be the guy. Like, I could see him being the leading play finisher. Like, if by some miracle he gets traded to Brooklyn and then Brooklyn isn't able to keep him and the Cavs add him somehow, like I could see him being the leading play finisher, but it still wouldn't be his team. And I think that's the case for any other team that would be in the running for him. So I think when you look at like the turnover issues that Boston had last year, I think Boston was as good as a team can be without having a point guard. Marcus Smart he defends point guards, but he's not a true point guard. He's not a true like table setter for guys. And I think going out and getting Malcolm Brogdon is going to make a really big difference for them. And they're still young. Like I can see Tatum and Brown improving in those aspects as well in the offseason. So I think it really does come down to their level of confidence that they are going to be able to retain his services. And if I'm Boston, I'm pretty motivated to resolve this situation one way or another. Either take yourself out of the Durant running and really endorse Jalen Brown and say, hey, this is the way we're going to move forward with. We believe in this team.
They're going to have to do that soon, right? This is a conversation we've had. Like, do you, teams don't do that, right? They can do it in the back channels and all that, but at some point, if you're going to roll forward with this, you don't like the package and you don't like the idea of adding Durant, I think you do have to come out and say, we like our team. We're moving on.
You can't have this being the Lakers, right? With Brandon Ingram, Lonzo, and all those guys that know that they're constantly in trade talks. Like, you don't want that hanging over your season, especially when you are going to be a contending team. Like, I think Milwaukee and Boston should be the two favorites in the NBA, period. Like, I think over any Western Conference team, I think those are the two best teams. Last year was a really unique circumstance, obviously, that helped contribute to Boston losing to Golden State. I think that series could have gone, like, I think if you play that over 100 times, it probably comes down 50-50. And it came down to kind of execution and some of those errors. And I think they've improved their depth. I think they've addressed one of the biggest holes in their roster, so they should have a high level of confidence. But like I said before, you also have to factor in how good does another Eastern Conference team get if they add Kevin Durant, and what does that do for a window? Because even if it just closes the window for a year or two, like let's say Toronto manages to get Durant on the cheap, and all of a sudden that's a team that you have to go through and you lose to them once or twice in like 7-game series over the next 2 years, what does that do to Jaylen Brown's free agency? How does he view Boston as a situation if that were the way to occur? I still think, like, I'm not saying if that were to occur that Boston wouldn't be able to beat them. I think those would be really competitive series. But that's something you have to factor in when you're weighing all of these options and all these scenarios.
Yeah, I'm looking ahead to that class. It's always tricky because teams can end up giving up their money with long-term deals, right? So if Brown's going to get, let's say, from another team, 42.9 year one, which is what Keith Smith added at, there's still quite a bit of teams right now that are going to have that money. So you wouldn't think he would go to a bad team to be the guy, which is certainly the most likely possibility money-wise, but you do have the Lakers with just Davis on the books. You potentially have like the Knicks maybe having just enough space at that point if they get the books along with those guards there. The Cavs, depending on what they do here with LeVert and Sexton. You got the Grizzlies. Yeah. That would be an interesting spot for him. And, you know, like maybe the Mavericks have some space at that point. Atlanta, where he's from, is a little tighter money-wise because of Young. And Murray as well is going to have to get paid there, so they're probably off the table. So he'd be crunched, and he'd be giving up a lot of money. So next summer, you can offer him, as I said, $248 guaranteed through 2028, and that could become $300 million if he makes All-NBA. Mm-hmm. That might get it done, unless he really wants to go to free, right? Because some guys might just want to have that experience, and then you get $248 anyway if you go back to Boston.
Yeah, I would anticipate him testing free agency, but you never know, right? Like, and if he does make an All-NBA team, that changes the equation. Like, again, like a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference, I think Boston is still banking on internal growth. Even though they were so good last year, you still have a lot of guys that could get significantly better. So they are one of the most interesting teams in the league. I think they're clearly one of the best teams in the league as well. So,
and they're going to be really fun to watch. And the guy we forget, plus 30 in the finals, playing on one leg, goes 10-10 last year, most blocks in the playoffs. If he's healthy,
yeah, I hope he's
rolling.
I hope he stays healthy because he is one of my favorite players to watch. But you know, Boston playing guys through knee injuries in the playoffs hasn't always worked out well for them.
Yeah, training camp, I'm interested to see how he looks. We haven't seen him a lot on his feet this offseason, but we'll see. Training camp coming quick. Cavaliers see their preseason schedules out. So we'll get an eye on them starting October 5th against Philly. And Celtics is out as well. You can go check out coming here soon. We'll try to sneak in a vacation next week. Although during this week run here, we might do a few more shows. Justin, good talking to you. You can get him all the time over at Chase Down podcast, official Cavaliers podcast, and a good friend of Dome Theory here. Thanks, Justin. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.